The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
Welcome along to the GAR. This is the football show on a Monday. Keane and Conan are in studio as usual. And we're down to two lads, two All-Ireland semi-finals. Attendances were very disappointing, to say the least. I don't know what to read into these attendances, but I was at the Dublin-Galway game on Saturday and the two teams ran out on the field. And I had to keep reminding myself, are these out an hour too early? And I looked at my watch and it was like 4:30 or 4:25, the usual time that they run out to. Croke Park was half full because the Dubs weren't all in and it was a poor crowd anyway. So it was maybe less sparse people and not a big cheer. The big kind of do-do-do-do, whatever music comes on, and then nothing. And this is an All-Ireland semi-final with Dublin involved. Like, Dublin would sell out Croke Park on their own easily. So just wondering why the hell this is. Like, I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. Galway had an all-right crowd there. Didn't have that many. They didn't, like, in the first half when they had something to cheer about. I'd say there could have been 10,000 from Galway there. Maybe a little bit more. Then Monaghan Tyrone, 49,000. Like, Ulster teams in the noughties were selling out Croke Park for Ulster finals. I just had a look. Armagh Donegal All-Ireland semi-final was 76,000 in 2003. What's going on here? What, like, I mean, are no neutrals going to these games? Is that the problem? Are Dublin having won so much and are so far ahead of the rest that they're getting like Kerry now, where they're not really interested maybe until being at a final? What's the reason for this, lads? Because we actually spoke about the first round of the Super 8s that were in Croke Park, and they were pitiful attendances as well, based on the four teams playing. So this is a serious issue.
Yeah, well, probably a number of different factors to it. The dominance of Dublin being the most obvious one to me. You know, you kind of like when you're talking about, like you were talking last week in the build up to the game, and it's Dublin versus the handicap. That's every game,
yeah,
and that's an All Ireland semi final against a Galway team who we've watched all year. We know are a very good team. So from that point of view, there's one thing. I mean, people neutral certainly aren't going to turn up. I mean, there's all good talking about, oh, go and see the Dubs in the flesh and see what they're like, but really neutrals don't care about that too much.
No.
I mean, at this stage it's kind of like, what's the point in that? I'd rather go and watch a competitive match, something where the game is in the balance right to the end. And then secondly, you would have to say that we are left at times with matches that aren't, they can be quite dour on occasion, because
yeah,
scores are at times very hard to come by when teams are very competitive with each other. Just with the way the game has sort of evolved, it's very much the top teams are playing a possession based game an awful lot, where they rarely take it to contact, because every time they do, they lose the ball, because players are just so physically fit, strong, they've worked so hard on their tackling skills that it doesn't make for great excitement, maybe.
Even Dublin are not an exciting team anymore.
No, they're far from it. It's very methodical. Like.
Yeah, they're methodical. And I was reading Malachy Clerken's match report, and he had in the first half, excluding Kieran Kilkenny scored from outside the D. Outside the D against Galway, a team that like actually try to get bodies back into the D. So Dublin aren't even entertaining this. They're tap over pints, which don't really get the crowd off their feet. Mannion was the only one out of 24 pints. Mannion is really the only one from under the Hogan stand that just had a shot. And I was actually thinking in my head, Jesus, Mannion, if this goes wide, you could be in trouble here. And honestly, like, it's the flair has gone out of Dublin. The flair has absolutely gone out of Dublin. That's the reality. Dublin are not anymore an exciting team to watch.
Well, the flair has been coached out of them.
Yeah,
really, because that's what they are. They're machine like in what they do. It's process, process, process. They do things like that where they rarely take. If you were to compare the shot selection, say, from the Monaghan and Tyrone match versus the Dublin, how Dublin did it, like Monaghan and Tyrone were taking shots from around the 45 or just inside, outside the screen. Dublin never, like,
no,
very, very rarely take those shots on. Probably because they're low percentage or whatnot. But the point is that it's not very exciting to watch. It might be very efficient and effective, but, you know, machinery is boring to me.
Yeah, you know, and they are running up 24 points. I don't want to be negative of them. You usually get...
Listen, I'm trying to explain, we have to revise this and say Dublin are brilliant.
Yeah,
because,
I know. I'm not even going down that road because I'm not entertaining this. We're trying to be fair and understand why 54,000 went to see Dublin in an All-Ireland semi-final when they are as great as they are. What is the reason for it? Like Sean Kelly tweeted, ex-GA president, the attendance at today's and yesterday's All-Ireland semi-finals have to be a cause of concern. Does it reflect expectation of inevitable outcomes and weariness at a type of football being played? Football suffering in comparison to the brilliance of hurling. And while you could even be accused of jumping the gun a little bit with round one of the Super 8s, we're definitely not jumping the gun here. This is absolutely an issue.
Yeah, it's interesting what Keane was saying about neutrals don't want to go watch Dublin, because I was going to go to one of these games as a fan with a family, and the game I chose, not just because I love Ulster, but Monaghan Tyrone, because I knew it would be closer, and I'm not that interested. As much as I respect Dublin, I wasn't that interested in watching them going through that process and seeing them if they can beat the handicap or whatever.
See, I was the opposite. I went to the Dublin Galway thinking Galway would make a game of it, and I didn't go Sunday because I went, oh god, it was raining out, and I went with the rain and all that, this is going to be terrible.
You're a fair weather fan,
literally. But like, is this just the price you pay for a congested fixture? It's like four big games in the last 5 weeks, a lot of money, like 6 day build up to the All-Ireland semi-final.
Yeah,
I mean, is this the sort of we're paying Peter here in order to Rob Paul and fix the championship a little bit?
All-Ireland semi-finals are where the bandwagoners come out of nowhere. Like, I mean, there should be enough in Dublin to get more than 54. Yeah. Even Tyrone and Monaghan, 49 is poor. Galway and Clare in the hurling got 50 something, and Limerick Cork got 70. Like, this is... Hurling is always less supported than football. Yeah. Like, this is a reflection of the product. There's no doubt in my mind about that.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that. And the beauty about this is that this is the only thing that the GA will listen to.
It's
falling attendances. Yeah. That's the only thing, because it's about the money, it's about the attendances, it's about the interest in the game. So... thankfully for a lot of us who would like to see something change in terms of the maybe slightly just evolve the way the game has to be played and some rule changes and whatnot to try and make it a more appealing product to watch for the neutral, because that's, you know, what a lot of this boils down to. It's the only thing they're going to listen to, so hopefully it's a sign that, you know, they have to do something about this. But I mean, this isn't an isolated incident. This is happening throughout the summer.
Yeah, no, it definitely is.
What would you say to, like last year, the most watched event was still the football final? Like, I know you're worried that football is in trouble.
It was Mayo-Dublin. Mayo have put it up to Dublin the last 4 or 5 years. Mayo are a match for Dublin. So this is a huge clash. Like, Mayo-Dublin is a huge, huge game based on Mayo have only been within a point of them in 5 games. They're the only team that hasn't been hammered by Dublin. I can guarantee you the figures for this year's All-Ireland final won't be anywhere near last year's, because people won't give Tyrone a chance.
Yeah, I think they still will. It's probably still be the most watched sporting event though.
Yeah,
you know, and this is why, I get it. Like, in football, obviously, is as good as it was. And
you can't base an argument off a hypothetical.
No, but I think you said it off air. Was like football is in trouble, but it's still the most popular sport in the country.
Yeah,
and it's
but you can't get complacent about it, because we've been saying for a few years now that it's going down a slippery slope of terrible to watch. It's terrible to play. A lot of players are saying they can't play in the full forward line. There's got serious problems. So year by year by year, we'll talk about this now, and attendances will drop to the point where it's going to need a huge rescue mission in 5 years' time, because they've been asleep at the wheel. Saying on this podcast for I don't know how long, it needs some help. It needs some help to bring back skills like catching and kicking, and they're not in it anymore. They're not in it enough anymore. And I'm going to talk in part two a little bit about the kind of tactics of the zonal marking and all this. When, for me, I would just let teams kick pass more. Kick passing is more risky. Therefore, if kick passing is more risky, entice the opposition to do it. You'll get a turnover. It's much easier. Philly McMahon in the first half against Galway kicking ball away because it was on. Galway weren't as defensive as they usually are. If kicking is higher risk, why rule out any opportunity for the opposition to do it? They'll just hold on to it and you'll never get the ball off them. Yeah. Tempt them into an odd risky pass, and don't always have your full forward line covered. You'll get lads maybe back to double up, but like, give them it, and you get your corner back out beside him, you'll punch it away. It's an easy turnover. It's the other turnovers are getting so hard to get.
Yeah, well, look, to me,
they have said it now instead of part
two. Yeah, I know, but to me, forget about the tactical thing. You know, leave that to one side for a minute. But the thing that makes a game exciting is when possession is changing hands.
Yes,
more regularly. You know, when there's turnovers happening, when the ball is being kicked into the full forward line or into the half forward line to a contest. You know, one team or another wins, the crowd can engage with the contest. Whoever wins the contest, their supporters, you know, that's a bit of a boost to their supporters. It's a bit of a cheer, and then the next phase moves on. Whereas it's impossible for the crowd to get involved in a game when lads are just hand passing it sideways. They run up to their opponent, they don't engage in the tackle, they turn back, move it on. They never actually try to break the tackle. You know, it's always kind of moving at an angle where the defender can't touch them. Like, that's what's considered good play now.
Yeah.
And, like, that's fine from a coaching perspective, but we're talking specifically here just from a spectator's perspective. You cannot get involved in the game. You can't. There's nothing for you to cheer at, to clap at, to get involved with, rather than just say, you know, a ball goes over the bar and you're like, oh, you know, well done. Good point there.
At the end of maybe 40
40 hand passes where lads don't even engage with the opposition. The opposition can't get to them to tackle them. It's kind of boring to watch.
And the pace
of the game drops entirely because no team can get energy into their group because it's sort of a... It's just like watching soccer. And GAA supporters, like most people, like what, you know, they watch a wide variety of sports, but they have their preferences. And a lot of people would watch a lot of soccer and they think a possession-based soccer game, it's kind of boring as well. Nothing is happening.
But nothing is happening, and I completely agree with you on that. But there's absolutely a skill in being able to hold the ball in soccer while someone's tackling. That's skillful. Is it skillful to hold a Gaelic football in your hands and pass it away? It's not. That's not what our game is about.
They're not even being tackled.
It's handball. You tell me, any nerd in school would catch and hand pass a ball.
Yeah, Gaelic football is very easy.
The skill in Gaelic football is kicking off the outside of your boot, your inside of your boot, and catching. Everybody can't do that. Everyone can hand pass and catch a hand pass. Yeah. It's like absolute not skillful. It's the opposite of skillful. It's mundane. It's anyone in school used to be able to do that.
Yeah, it is an easy sport. Like it's very, very tiring. It's tough. But like, imagine like what you can do with a ball in your hands wherever you are on the pitch. You can kick it. You can run with it. You can hand pass it off. Like, you can do whatever you want. But you're right, in soccer, it's much more skillful to do all through your feet.
Yeah, so you can appreciate the skill of Barcelona being able to hold it under pressure, and nobody can do that because it's hard. It's not hard to throw a Gaelic football around on the outside of a screen.
140 metre pitch.
Like, anyways, I hope maybe we've come to explain a little bit. People talk about holidays, they're talking about the increased matches. I would counter all that with saying they're fecking All-Ireland semi-finals.
They're like
the second biggest game of the year for your county. There's no excuse for that. There might be an excuse for a third round Super 8 game, you know, that your county's through and you're like, geez, I'm not paying into that. An All-Ireland semi-final, Croke Park has to be full for them lads, and it has to have 15,000 neutrals that are going in there and going, I'm going to be entertained with this, and that's not happening. Anyways, we need to move on to some talking points from the matches before we get into them, lads. Malachy O'Rourke was not happy at the end of the game yesterday. So he said, I thought the free count was against us. I thought we were working very, very hard for frees. I thought even the last one with Kieran Hughes, I thought the referee had his hand up for a free and he didn't give it. So there was a lot of things. Look, I haven't had the advantage of looking back, but a number of things we'd be disappointed about. I take his point on the free at the end. The referee did have his hand up. Six of one, half a dozen of the other. You'd be very fortunate to get a free in that circumstance. The issue here was Rory Began and losing his mind completely in a very high pressurised situation and going for his own glory. A big 6 foot six monster of a man trying to kick a pint on the run. Think of the degree of difficulty that he tried to take on there. Inexperience, wanting the glory himself, and like, we obviously have to put this in the context of Rory Began being brilliant and having a great year, just so in case people will be all upset that, you know, you're criticising him too much. But he lost his mind, absolutely. The ball in there Kieran Hughes was cleaning up in the second half was to pop it in front of him, and the ref was dying to draw that game up, you know. Yeah. But he went for a point lads, it was a meltdown.
Yeah, it was a very bad decision from Began at the time. Try to provide a bit of context for him. He's watching his team attack after attack after attack, and they're consistently breaking down. And you could argue he's taking on the responsibility.
If it went over,
it's all revisionist thinking. Yeah. But when you look at it, you say, look, it was a bad decision. It was a very, very low percentage shot, even more so for let's, you know, for a guy who's not in the game that much in terms of kicking from the hand,
yeah.
So wouldn't have the rhythm of that. And as you say, like, there was a pocket of space there. Like, Kieran Hughes was isolated one-on-one, I think, with McKernan. He's way too strong for McKernan. All he had to do was really just, and Began can do it, just pop the ball, just float the ball in there to him.
Yeah, perfect.
Hughes was, you know, they were battling under the high ball, and Hughes was after getting a free before that. And as you say, in that scenario, the referee, who, I do agree with Malik O'Rourke, I thought that Monaghan, at times... Look, it, in fairness, throughout the game, it's impossible to know what the hell was a free and what the hell wasn't a free.
I think it balanced itself out. Because I think McMahon has got a few handy ones in the first half. I thought Kavanagh got a... We'll talk about that in performance of the weekend. He got an unbelievably soft one, yeah. Where he blatantly dived.
But look, either way, the ref would have, as they always do, near the end of a game, if it's a dicey call and a team has a point down, the referee is going to give a free to level up the game. That's just has always happened because it's human nature.
And he put his hand up, he wanted to give that free, but the ball was up so high, it was like it wasn't even a contest for the ball, so he couldn't give it. He wanted to give that free, but it was just Began gave him no opportunity to give it.
Yeah, all he had to do was pop it into Hughes. But look, I'm sure he'll regret that decision, and you know, he'll have to just live with it and move on.
Yeah, one thing that I do agree with Malachy on, I don't agree with him on the referee, but the extra time, 3 minutes of extra time, lads, 9 subs came on, and it's 20 seconds per sub. That's the 3 minutes. In just on the subs, for 20 seconds a sub, 9 subs, 3 minutes, do the maths. So he added on no extra time.
Yeah,
how could he get away with that?
Yeah, look, that was bad. There was, it should have been at least another 2 minutes, I think. I'm sure Peter Hart was down the second half for a while, at least another two. So yeah, most of these games tend to have 7 or 8 minutes injury time with all the subs and the knocks that occur,
and
in the game.
Become accustomed to that.
Yeah, and in fairness, that wouldn't have been beyond the realms either.
No.
I can understand why it'd be a little bit disappointing when you lose a game like that, because they were, you know, they were fairly relentless, Monaghan, and continuing. Like, they never died. Yeah, they're just unbelievable character.
They were coming back into it, and the thing about it is, if there was another 3 minutes there, 6, which I think would be fair, Began wouldn't have gone for that balloon. You know what I mean?
But even at that, Began had another 30 seconds. There was 30 seconds of play after that kick, so there was loads of time to go through the process like Dublin would have done. And I think it was, two bad decisions from Began. The first one was to shoot. The second one was to not steady himself a bit more, taking on another 2 yards, and then maybe shoot. Plus, he had just come from the goal line where he caught the ball, so he's only after running 80 metres, and now he's taking on a 60 metre kick.
Oh my god, his legs would be completely dead.
Would have been some score if he got it done.
But I was shouting at the telly, don't do it, because you can see him lining up for this. Like, he wound up for it. I was like, please don't do that.
To give him a bit of a way out as well, and just as a general thing on it, you know, look, it was a bad decision, but in that scenario, when you see a chap in that position, like, somebody needs to just come and take the ball off him. Now, I know, in fairness to Monaghan guys had given everything. They were absolutely out on their feet. So, it's not a criticism, but, God, as a point of principle, somebody needed to be getting off his shoulder and giving him something. Like, that's all. Somebody needed to be hungry for the ball in that situation, or get away from their man and just give him an option. And...
yeah.
He didn't.
Somehow I don't think they were getting it. Sometimes I think Began had made up his mind.
I don't know. It's very hard to say, but there was no Monaghan player. There was no Monaghan player that was on the move, that was getting away from his man and giving him an easy option.
Yeah.
That's my only comment on it. But either way, it was still a bad decision.
No, it was. And definitely Clerkin has, or Malachy O'Rourke has a huge point about the extra time. I think the referee needs to answer that, because that's clearly technically wrong what the referee did. Cluxton was an interesting one, lads, because I was watching this. Cluxton won the toss and played into the hill in the first half. Is this not go against everything we thought about Dublin? I always remember Dublin always played into the canal so that they'd have the hill for the second half. So I wonder what the psychology there was. It was a strange one, because I was watching, it was on the big screen, and Cluxton pointed down into the hill in the first half. Any idea about that, King?
There's a bit of a swirling wind into Hill 16, maybe in the latter stages of a game when free taken into the canal end is easier. So
you think that's the thinking? It's against tradition, though, isn't it? Because you played Dublin, you always know they want to play in the hill in the second half. I remember playing with Leash saying, we'll go in to the canal in the first half.
When we beat them by 11 points, we kicked into the hill in the second half. So.
Well, that not maybe turned them off, and maybe that was it. But like, I mean, it is a weird... I just thought it was a weird one. Maybe it's a question I would like to ask Cluxton, because definitely thought the psychology was to go into the hill in the second half and have that hole. The hill will drive us home and we'll kick it in and get all the cheering. Another quick one is Cluxton for the goal, lads. That was deplorable goalkeeping. I mean, you have two lads on Comer, you have one lad marking him tight, you have another man on cover, and he comes into no man's land and allows a punch. Like, I mean, Cluxton is a bit suspect for stuff like that. That's a weakness, a clear weakness in his game. And you wonder why. Talk about this again in part two. The lack of balls like that into Dublin and into Comer especially. I don't know. Like, I mean, and it was totally kind of changed the game in that first Cluxton comes, makes a balls of that, and it was a handy goal. Then just the penalty, right? And then Cluxton saves the penalty and redeems himself doing what he's brilliant at, yeah, which is cat-like reflexes down to the ground, because it wasn't a great penalty, but it wasn't the worst penalty. You see a lot of them going in because goalkeeper, that would have, Began wouldn't have scored that because he wouldn't have got down that fast, you know, close to his body. Then it went out for a 45, Shane Walsh misses it, and then Dublin go down the field and get a point from Kilkenny. Game over. That was the end of that game then, and it all kind of happened. It was exciting at that time.
Well, it was, yeah, because it Galway were skirmishing in around the goal. But even after that Comer got his goal, the next kick out, Galway won the kick out, and Cluxton, I think, came off his line to block. I can't remember if it was Cluxton or not, but Comer got a toe on a shot that was kind of saved out as well. So there was a couple of minutes there where Galway, look, realistic against Dublin, you need to take all of them, and you need to be about 7 or 8 points ahead at half time to have any chance of beating them.
Yeah,
that's the way it's been for about the last 5 years.
Can you believe Cluxton coming out for a ball like that, though?
It was a terribly bad decision by Cluxton to come for it. But look, there was two defenders there. Realistically, what you're looking at there is when there's two defenders, one defender is stopping Comer getting off the ground and just trying to break it, and the other defender picks it up. Yeah, I mean, it's basic.
And Cluxton stays in his line. He's gathering that into his belly.
The only other scenario is if it's one defender and the goalkeeper, and in that case the defender pins the forward, doesn't let him get off the ground, and the keeper comes out and punches it clear.
How often do you see that, a goal being flicked into an empty net because the goalie won't stay on? Isn't it unreal why they're tempted out there? Well, is it
the flight on the ball is good.
You think he can get there.
He probably just thought it was coming a little bit further than it was. He thought it was coming further, and look, to be fair, it was a great ball in from Duggan, I think. He just put it in a great position that it couldn't be attacked too much by the Dublin defenders. It was hanging so Comer could judge it, and it did tempt Cluxton in a bit, rightly or wrongly.
It did. It's definitely sucked him out of the goals. Right, just to finish up before we go into part two, a tweet from Brian McGuigan. So Brian McGuigan, obviously a genius on the field and clearly a smart man off it, because he tweeted last night. He said, "Booked 10 rooms in City West 2 months ago for the All Ireland weekend. Have a few spare at a good price if anyone's looking for one." There you go. Right, we'll be back in part two and have a look at the matches.
Derek, great to finally get to interview you.
Oh, really, yeah?
Why
is it great?
Why do you not do many interviews?
I don't know, really. I haven't been asked to do a whole pile of...
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
I know we spoke about the defensive side of things. If you're coming in and if you want to be the Woolly Parkinson and just play for myself, and an inter-county corner forward isn't just hatching inside either. Unfortunately for you, Woolly, it won't last forever. You can ask ex-players that. You can ask that yourself, Woolly.
Yeah, mine never started at all.
Yeah, well, that's neither here nor there.
All right, so we'll start with Dublin and Galway here, lads, and I want to talk about Galway's collapse in the second half and their performance in the first half, which I thought was very, very good. If they scored the penalty, Comer missed an awful chance. They had six wides in the first half alone. They played Sean Armstrong they played three men up front at all times. Shane Walsh was in around midfield trying to get up and support. So it was a more attacking-minded Galway than we had seen. Brannigan and Heaney were very off form. Brannigan had a nightmare and probably should have gone off a little bit sooner, so they didn't perform to the level that they should have. I thought Galway's system was as close to a system that might trouble Dublin in the first half, but then in the second half, like, Dublin just went up a gear. It actually reminded me of Galway and Kilkenny in the hurling a few years ago, where Galway were great in the first half and in the second half they died. So like, Dublin get a couple of points in the second half and you're thinking, right, well, Galway have to get one or two here And then it's just like the whole half just continues on with Galway having completely thrown in the towel. And I just didn't understand it, because they were causing, Burke was cleaning out Merchant in the first half. Comer, it's criminal how much they don't use Comer. So if that goal came through, how many more balls did he get after that goal? I can't remember, one or two. None. After that goal. So how, that's brain dead. So you're talking about Brannigan running down the right hand side, and Comer, because he's been marked from the front all the time, Comer's peeling off his man, and he's given this, give me one, give me one, like Leash used to give Donny Kingston, where you're just kind of lashing it off the outside of your boot to the far side.
You play it high with depth on it.
Play it high with depth on it. So if Comer's been marked from the front for a ball in front, well then he's in front of his man for a ball over the top, and they give him none. And Comer's shouting for these, right? And Sean Armstrong was guilty of it as well. And these are all positions under the Hogan that Leash were getting, turning onto the outsider boot and whacking it across. What was the game plan if that's not the game plan? Leash gave you the game plan. You'll get a one-on-one on the far side of the field, and Comer, being the bull that he is, could go past his man. So they just kind of got it arseways, I think, tactically. While their setup was right, they just didn't supply... They didn't give Dublin anything really to worry about outside of that little spell in the first half.
Yeah, looking in the first half, Galway caught Dublin were very, very poor in the first half as well, you have to say.
Yeah, because Dublin were very efficient shooting in the first half.
Yeah, really, really efficient. Like Dublin's conversion rate in the first half was excellent. Now,
10 from 12.
Again, they do make sure that they only shoot from, you know, almost...
Well, that's true. They do turn down
positions.
A lot. They do, yeah.
Like, there's oftentimes you'd watch them, and it was a thing I've seen them over the last number of years, where you're just thinking, a forward has a half a yard of space, he's within range, and he doesn't take it on. You're going to go, what? Are they they're afraid to shoot her? But they're working into position to make it an easy score. And that efficiency was what, you know, kind of killed Galway, because on the balance of play, Galway had, you know, battled decently around the middle of the field, were forcing Dublin, didn't allow Dublin to get the territory in their running game as often as they usually do. So it meant they were trying to kick the ball from a little bit further out inside, and that was giving the Galway defenders a chance to compete for possession in the inside line, rather than what Dublin usually do, which is carry the ball all the way up and have little hand passes off the shoulder. Like, it's Dublin don't really kick the ball that often into their full forward.
Not as much, but they were tempted into it a bit.
That's what I mean. They were tempted into it because they couldn't, due to sort of, I don't know what it was, complacency, lack of energy, or just good pressing from Galway, they weren't able to get that far up the pitch. Now look, you could say, well, Galway played with more numbers in their forward line, so therefore Dublin couldn't just waltz the ball up the pitch, and maybe that's a factor that teams need to look at. But Galway's efficiency in front of goal really let them down. Lads that you would like Sean Armstrong had a couple of misses. That these are chances these lads usually get, and they're on the team to get them.
Yeah.
So on a day when you play Dublin, all those chances need to go over. And unfortunately for Galway, when they had their spell of dominance and they had their chances, they weren't able to take them. And Dublin were so efficient down the other end that when they kicked into gear in the second half and started playing with a bit more aggression and kind of going after the game, Dublin a little bit more, Galway just had no answers to them.
No, they absolutely had no answers. And like, I mean, I don't think Galway ran out of gas. It almost maybe looked like they did. It was a weird one. Like, I mean, they completely were taken out of the game.
But the way Dublin play, and it is this possession based game, they don't give you a chance to get turnovers. So you're chasing shadows, you're running back down the field, and then it almost invariably ends up with a Dublin shot at goal, which more often than not goes over the bar. And then it's like, okay, we're reset
from
for the kick out, and you're trying to get back out the field to then get that energy into the team to go again.
Yeah.
So Galway were kind of caught a little bit, you know, possibly in the second half, you know, when they could see what was going on, they probably needed to go back into their shell and actually go very defensive and just block. Now, Dublin then would have just passed it around in front of them. So, but they needed to just change up something. There was no change in the second half. Even just to make the scoreline a bit more respectable, or give yourself a foothold in the game. You need the ball. Like, you need possession to have a foothold in any game. When you have possession, you're in control of the game. You're in control of the match.
Two things in that is, Dublin are a very defensive team now, and yesterday really rammed it home to me that I was thinking Dublin forwards are coming back kind of chasing lads because it's such a fluid game and defensive teams attack from everywhere. But absolutely not. Yesterday they were just dropping back off their men, back, you know, into defensive positions.
They conceded the kick out an awful lot to Galway.
Yeah, well, you see, sometimes I think RT panel's obsessed with kick outs. You can only push up and kick out from a bloody free, right? And Galway had no free, or Galway were scoring from play. You can't get up that fast. The game's all over the place.
No, but Dublin weren't pressing the Galway kick out a lot. Like,
yeah,
even
but they can
even
only
when
do
they had
it
numbers.
From a, yeah, but they
they
can
were
still do dropping it, you can only do it right from a free. Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah, yeah. Right from a free. So the idea that you can show examples of not pushing up in a kick out, but where did that kick out come from? If it came from play, it's not fair, you know, because it's impossible to do it. But Galway were not good at breaking Dublin down when Dublin got back into position, and Galway didn't move the ball fast enough. This is a problem. Galway have no pace in their half back line. Their half back line is one pace. It's Brannigan, Kelly and Sweeney. Terribly slow half back line. So there's no one coming in. So Walsh and Brannigan and Heaney, Brannigan and Heaney completely gone off the boil. The only fella really that can break a line is Walsh. And yet, how many times can Walsh come back around and try to get through? It's not easy to get through. They've no one to work across and inject that pace. Whereas Dublin have pace all over their team. McCarthy can do it. Jack McCaffrey can do it. When you get into that position, look at Carroll O'Connell. You know all these pacey lads that just, the minute they get it, Ryan McHugh, they're just able to punch a hole. And when you punch a hole and drag two, three lads to you, then the pop is on to somebody else. Galway don't have that. They've no one from deep coming to cause any problems. So yeah, unless Galway find some excitement and pace in their half back line, I'd stick with the centre back, his name or Bradshaw, I'd stick with him because he's solid and he could maybe do. But their two wingmans, Kelly and Sweeney, just aren't at the races at senior into county level as far as I'm concerned.
So you're revising your thought now on Galway Windale Ireland.
They need a player or two, and look who they're bringing on, like Gary O'Donnell, who's pushing on in years, he's coming on. I'd have him ahead of Sweeney any day of the week. And you've Johnny Dwan, you know, you've Kieran Malloy who come on. Now in fairness to Malloy, he came on when Dublin were just, they were taking pot shots at that stage, they were going for goals and like hitting the crossbar. It was an impossible task at that stage, but they need a bit of flair from wing back.
Yeah, you're right. The difference was at Conor Callaghan goal, where Jack McCaffrey just motors up the pitch like
he injects some pace into any move. Yeah. Like, I mean, the minute Jack McCaffrey gets it, yeah, something's happening here. Something's going to happen.
So that's a goal just because of his purpose and pace, obviously. Yeah. And then he pops a nice ball over the top to Scully.
It's the pace and the precision of the Dubs. Yeah. Like, just look at it. It's almost impossible to defend against. And it was a cheap goal for Galway to concede, because Kelly just took a chance that McCaffrey wouldn't find Scully with the pass. You can't take chances against Dublin. Yeah. Like, you have to be alert. You can't hedge your bets hoping for the pass to fall short, because it invariably doesn't. So he was caught a little bit. Now again, in the preceding couple of minutes, he probably covered a lot of ground. Maybe he's dead in his legs. He just didn't have the energy to get there. But either way, it should have been defended better by Galway. You know, it's one hand pass opens up your entire defence. It's the Dublin full forward line pulling out and a wing forward running in over the top. I mean, these are basic things that people should be able to spot the danger earlier, yeah, and cover it off. And that goal killed Galway in the first half, because when they were dominant, you concede what is a relatively poor goal to concede, and all of a sudden all your best plans are in the air. You lose a bit of momentum, and they needed that 3-point cushion in the second half to have any hope of being in the game.
Even their loop moves, how often does Dean Rock come on the loop and he's not being marked? Like, isn't it unbelievable? Like, I mean, you know what he's going to do. Dublin will run, Jack McCaffrey will keep running and keep running up maybe to the 21, and someone's coming in around him. And that's their move.
But Willie,
Rock's not being marked.
But the thing about Dublin is, Dublin are so methodical that they're actually very predictable. So it's very rare that Jack McCaffrey will, or someone like him, will run through and do a dummy hand pass, the thing you shouldn't do, and then continue on and run through. So defenders at this stage, like, there's nothing unpredictable about what Dublin do on their attack, which you would think would make it a lot easier to defend against, because it's the unpredictability of what a forward is going to do that causes problems for defenders an awful lot.
They always have options, and they always have hard runners, and it's just hard to stay with it, I suppose.
Is that not the risk, though, that if you sort of keep an eye on Rock, the McCaffrey will just burst on through that whole thing? People say Aryan Robbins is only left-footed, but
you know what he's going to do, but you can't do anything because they're so good. And like, but even you look at the size, like, I mean, I think Merchant is a weak link in a full back line. I said this on Thursday and I was proven right. He probably won't play there against Tyrone, he'll follow Sludden, which will be fine. But like, I mean, you can see the Owen Cairns, while he's a tenacious player and gets out beside, sure, Mannion just took him on and just ran past him. You know, that's the one thing Mayo have on Dublin, is they have a match physically in all their defenders. When Dublin take the contact on Mayo, they go, whoa, I'm not going any further because it's too strong, it's too big, they're right up there physically with them. I think like Mannion wouldn't just goes past Harrison for example. Do you know, he might take it, he'll feel a hand on him and he go, whoa, I'll go back, I'm not going to give it away, I'll be in trouble. And I think that's definitely where some of these teams are falling down. But then again, it's just Dublin's constant movement and constant runs.
That is the big thing. If you compare when Monaghan were coming up against Tyrone near the end of the game, you could do a freeze frame and you have four or five Monaghan players standing right beside their Tyrone opponent, just inside the 45, in that 15 metre space from the 45 to 30, no movement.
Yeah.
All in a heap down the centre of the field. No, Dublin never get caught like that. No. They're always pulling wide, they're getting to space, their movement off the ball in their forward line, they're unselfish runs, knowing they're not going to get the ball, but just getting to a pocket of space, dragging a defender away.
Yeah.
Just that perpetual motion. And that's what absolutely moves these defences around and kills them. And Monaghan, unfortunately for them, I know we're going on to that game, but they usually do it an awful lot better, and their attacking game against Tyrone, whether it was a lack of energy because they were working so hard defensively or what, just wasn't as good. And it's just a stark difference. It's why Dublin can get in for those easy scores, because they're just opening up gaps.
It is. If somebody's coming through on the ball, you'll have Kilkenny coming around the back of him, and you'll have somebody coming across the front of him. And if Kilkenny gets around the back, he's heading at a different direction across, and then that might be popped to someone else that's coming straight at the goal, and then another hand pass at some. It's constant angles and constant runs. And it's very hard to defend against that, even when you have
and
people
injecting
back.
Pace. Injecting, as well.
And then you see all these lads are McCarthy, McCaffrey.
Ah, yeah, they're powerhouses.
Sure, sake, how do you stop these lads? I actually think the only way to play against Dublin is more like Mayo, where you're actually not, you're tempting them out of the hand passing game, because they're unbeatable at that. They're too powerful. You're getting too much contact. Tempt them into giving it their full forward line. They'll give you more turnovers than they will the other way. Actually kind of refusing them the kick pass is a complete waste of time. Do you know what I mean? I actually think you're better off, say, we're going to leave a good gap from the 45 in, and we'll have a few lads on around the 45 metre line that the minute they kick it in, we'll turn around and we'll try and double up on him as he comes out to win the ball. Instead of going, right, we'll have two men in here zonal, then they'll never kick it. They'll just pick you off the way we're talking here. You know, that kind of way. Dublin have just changed the game with their physique and with their patience. And while we're complimenting them on their boring style because it wins matches. The point we're making it's not great to watch, but I don't blame Dublin for that. That's how you play against these teams who have lots of men back. This is how Dublin have evolved into a winning machine. It's not a critique of Dublin, say they're boring. It's a critique maybe of the system they're playing against.
But also the thing about it is, it's what suits their players. They have McCaffrey, they have McCarthy, they have these unbelievable runners with pace from deep. They've loads of legs and energy in the team. They don't have a Comer. If Dublin had Comer, they'd be kicking the ball into him. That's the reality.
Yeah.
But they don't have a Comer, so they can't play that type of game. That's just the reality. The players that they have are suited to a different style of play. Dublin don't kick the ball in 50-50 because...
Well, Kilkenny could become a Comer.
He could be. But when they put him into the full forward lane, you do see them going direct on occasion because they know he's a good ball winner. But the other guys in there rely on that quality of movement and coming on the loop and that clever sort of stuff. And that's the way Dublin played that suits them.
Yeah.
So, every team has to find the balance that suits them. And in fairness to Dublin, they don't get it wrong.
No, they absolutely don't. In fairness, Fenton and Thomas Flynn had a good battle. Fenton probably won it. He broke off him and he scored 2 points. He actually celebrated his second off his left, Fenton did, which you don't,
drop for the final.
it was kind of withdrawn. It was Niall Scully I was thinking of in the first half. As a wing forward, you're running in, he's under the Cusack stand, it's not a hard angle, and he's gone in past the 45 before five more steps inside. And I'm saying, jeez, flick that off the inside of your boot. He wouldn't go for the point. He threw it off to someone who was coming in the opposite direction around. It's Jesus Christ. Why didn't he go for that point himself? Was he afraid? Because he's accurate. It's a weird one. It nearly has to be that there's no other option. I think they're so obsessed with being a team, and Jim Gavin is talking again, it's the sum of the parts, and he put you asleep after an All-Ireland semi-final. But they've got this ethos so ingrained in them now that it can't really be an individual score. That's nearly a bad point, that you've done this all in your own. There was two runs off you. That's not a team score. They want team scores. I think this is being rammed down their throat so much that Mannion's brilliant score, Jesus, Mannion, where did that come out of? Because they nearly have to be worked. They have to be able to run a couple of runs.
Yeah, but I think, yeah, that is for a reason as well. Like, yeah, Scully probably could have put it over and finished off a great move, but it's almost that the fact that he pops it off, statistically, over 70 minutes, when they keep popping it off, it works out in the long run.
Yeah. Maybe, yeah.
And even if you look at it, though, it's probably no harm that he's doing that, because there were a couple of occasions where one extra pass for Dublin would have had a handy flick into goal. Con O'Callaghan fisted one over the bar in the second half when John Small was inside him, and in the first half there was something similar. I can't remember who got the score, but so I suppose that they're preaching that message because they always know that they have these runners coming from very late. So yeah, more power to them.
Tyrone Monaghan, lads, because this kind of Tyrone, you were at this game, Conan, you were on the hill, so you'll have seen this up close more than anybody else. That Tyrone in the first half, they must have left four forwards up there, did they? Like, I mean, this was a complete departure, completely took Monaghan by surprise. And another thing I always think of, why don't teams mix things up a bit more game on game? Monaghan played their normal, predictable game, right? So two men left up, sometimes defending with everybody, and they're admirable and everything like that. But Tyrone completely sucker punched them in the first half. They were not expecting that level of intensity, that level of attacking play. Tyrone players popping up all over the field ahead of the ball. It wasn't a counter-attacking game, and Tyrone got that start, and only for Tyrone's wastefulness, no more than Galway's, stupid efforts, defenders thinking that they're heroes, took the complete wind out of their sails, and Monaghan, being the competitors that they were, slowly but surely got into a game that did no business being in at all.
They weren't in it. Like, I couldn't believe at one stage there was 2 points in between.
Couldn't
the
believe it.
Like, Tyrone are hammering them here, like, you know. And like, yeah, I think that start sort of spooked Monaghan a bit as well, because it was just completely unknown that they were going to do this. It was bang, 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 4 points.
Yeah,
and it was like, shit, all these players are up in the full forward line.
Beautiful football too, like really moving the ball at pace. Stuff that we're, because I remember criticising Tyrone against Cork after the Armagh-Roscommon game, and even in the second minute of this game, it was just so lethargic. The crowd started talking. I remember we were talking about that, but this was bang, bang, bang. This was like, I seriously think Tyrone are constantly getting that little bit closer to what we want them to be like.
Yeah, I saw Owen Mulligan, it was an interview on, I think it was Paddy Power, our good friends here.
How convenient.
But he was talking about nobody learns more from a match than Mickey Hart does, and it was interesting going into this game considering they had just played Monaghan back in May or June, and it seemed like that he definitely had learned so much more than Malachy O'Rourke did, and the game was played in Tyrone's terms for most of it.
Yeah, so how were Monaghan so close? I know the second half turned conservative. It was a fear of losing, took a total grip of the game, and the game turned into a game that suited Monaghan more than Tyrone, and Monaghan looked the likely winners 12-11 until Monaghan, let's be honest, got a fluke of a goal in that it was a great finish. But Darren Hughes would have been better off just letting Tiernan McCann shoot with his left. Like, there was no need to block him there. Like, that wasn't going in. I can guarantee you it wasn't going in. But the block just falls sludding. Like, there's an awful element of luck about that, because Monaghan looked the likely winners at that stage.
Oh, they did, yeah. Well, look, they were in the ascendancy. They were a point or two clear at the time. It was an unbelievable block by Hughes, and there was another defender throwing himself in front of it as well, just some Monaghan up. And look, Rory Beggan, to be fair to him, he didn't really cover himself in glory with the way he came out to save the shot from sludding. I'm not a goalkeeping coach, so I'd leave that to the experts, but it didn't look brilliant to me. But if you're to compare the start, the first 5 or 10 minutes of the game yesterday to their game in the Ulster Championship, they were very similar in that just the quality was unbelievable. The kick passing was unbelievably accurate, the pace and the support runs, and that Ulster Championship game started fairly hot too. Tyrone kicked a couple of great scores, Monaghan got a couple of great scores. It was something similar. And then eventually the game just got into that pattern where, you know, a team misses a couple of chances.
Yeah.
When, you know, they're kicking under pressure, or they're just shooting from
the
wrong
position.
Some of
them weren't. Burns, I think
McCallisky missed a couple that you would expect him to get. Like, it was some of the chances Tyrone missed were, you would say, were poor misses. But some of the others were taken from difficult angles. But look, Monaghan, just as they do, just ground their way back into the game. And
without playing well.
No, like Monaghan didn't play well at all. Now, look, the effort and the hunger and the tackling from both teams is just incredible. The energy that both teams put into the game, and just the character shown at times by both teams when they faced adversity, was just incredible. It was absorbing. But the second half just got so tense. It was almost tense watching it. It was nerve-wracking to watch, because any mistake could have proved crucial, and Monaghan just made more mistakes, kind of semi-unforced, where, like, there was one that kind of springs to mind that kind of summed it all up for me, where Began, well, there's a couple of them, but Began hits a kick out over the top to Darren Hughes. Darren Hughes is 5 yards ahead of his man, just can't get the ball picked up in time, eventually gets it up on the second or third attempt, and his three Tyrone lads around him and gets turned over and dispossessed. Another one where Carl O'Connell is running down the wing, and a great chase from Harry Loughran, and he just gets the merest of touches on him that kind of puts him off balance, and Carl O'Connell loses the ball. You know, there was all this sort of stuff was happening for Monaghan in the first half. A ball into McManus, he gets his hands on it with Hamsey. Carl O'Connell is coming, who barely gets his toe on the ball, and if he'd missed it entirely, McManus would have just picked it up. He gets a toe on it, it ends up being just outside of McManus's reach, and the Tyrone lads get the turnover. So there was a number of these things just happened for Monaghan where it just, the run of the ball just slightly went against them, and all of those added up over the course of the game and just cost them in the end, because I thought they were the better team, but they just couldn't get it over the line.
I think they're predictable on Monaghan, and I think Tyrone definitely did their homework against Galway and really defensive teams, in that they're spreading it wide and they're doing all that. So Tyrone didn't go as defensive, pressurised them a little bit further up the field, and Monaghan didn't know where to go, because usually Monaghan have free possession outside that 45. This is easy, let's pick it apart, let's move it across. They got no opportunity to do that because they're being pressurised out there, they were being hit out there, and Tyrone completely threw them off their game plan. I don't know how Tyrone didn't win this game well. I really don't. I think Tyrone, the wides messed them up psychologically. Suddenly they're in a dogfight and they got unbelievably nervous, and Monaghan looked the better team then when it was a dogfight. But when it came to kicking football, there was only one team that kicked football yesterday for me, and that was Tyrone.
Yeah, and I think they did press him higher. Colm Kavanagh, for one, was like much further out than he was. He did drop back in when they were under pressure, but he was sort of implementing that squeeze where he was out 20, 30 yards out trying to push people further on to put that pressure on.
Right.
I think the big thing for Monaghan, why they were probably in the game so much, but was Rory Began, though, because they got primary ball all the time, whereas Niall Morgan was more just sort of lost into the air, and Monaghan probably got a lot more success out of their kickouts. So they had the ball maybe a lot more from primary possession. Maybe that's what kept him in it.
Yeah. Kieran Hughes made a huge difference. Like, I mean, he was properly... Conor McCarthy played well in the first half, not so much in the second half. Sludden went completely out of the game until his goal. Like, he might have been taken off before that. He had completely, whether it was gassed out or not, I don't know. We'll talk about him a little bit in performance of the weekend. But, like, I mean, I don't know. Hughes just gave them that little bit of... It just, you know, he was able to get a handy score where everyone else could take a breather and go, Jesus, we just had to give him that there and he scored. You know what I mean? It's such a nice feeling in a game like that to go, and that's what makes the Began decision even worse, that Hughes was on his game. Like, he was on his game, on his, like, a big burly fella who wanted the ball out in front and was just taking on his man and scoring.
But they didn't give it enough.
They didn't give it to him enough, no.
The first 5 minutes he was on, I think he was free for like three plays, and he wouldn't play it in, and until one person played it in, he took it past McKernan and just put it overhead. Like,
yeah, bizarre finish, wasn't it, that one?
Jesus, they start giving him the ball then all of a sudden.
Yeah. There was one thing that confused me, lads, and I said last Thursday that Lee Brennan is better coming on. Lee Brennan got no ball close to goal. Now, I don't know, is this Lee Brennan's fault for coming foraging? He's not a forager. He's slow. He's useless out around the 45. What's he doing out there? He is a man that win a ball in close to goal, and then he got a jink and trickery that he could maybe make some. What was he getting all his possessions on the 45 for? Had he no patience? Or was the game plan for Donnelly and McCallisky to be inside and for Brennan to be outside, which makes no sense to me whatsoever? Why are you playing Lee Brennan if you're not playing him where he's got one... The minute he gets the ball, he's got an option to shoot, because his beautiful dummies are useless on the 45, because to throw a dummy, the defender has to be worried that you're going to shoot, or else your dummies are useless. Sure, why is he going to sell your dummy if you're not, if there's not a point on? So all his qualities have just been taken off Lee Brennan, to the point where you've been getting crappy possessions on the 45, and then tries a Hail Mary one from under the Cusick because he was just desperate at that stage, and even his accuracy couldn't get it. And that was the one critique I'd have drawn. That was totally confused.
Yeah, well, look, it's difficult when you're marking Ryan Wiley. He's a really tight defender. There was one great bit of tackling from him where Brennan got the ball kind of running out the field along the along the Cusick stand side, and Riley was right on it, forced him back about 40 metres back the field, where he had to just recycle it. But
and then pushed him to really rub it in.
And Riley, every time he gets the ball, he's bloody running up the field with it. And even when any time Monaghan get possession, he just takes off up the right wing. You know, it's a tactic to completely mess up Brennan's game. And Brennan was having to drop back with him, you know, because look, they obviously hadn't spoken about the fact that Lee Brennan needed to stay inside. They hadn't got him designated as one of the guys to stay up there. So, you know, that's where his game ended up being. So he wasted all of his energy back down the field. Couldn't really get back in then to the inside forward line to make his runs from there to get on the ball. So that's what happens. That's what happens to these forwards when their team setup and team structure doesn't just allow them to stay up the field.
Yeah.
You know, we have enough guys back, you stay up there. You're actually no addition to us back here, because you wouldn't stop anyone with a tackle anyway.
And his actual performance, like, I mean, it just mirrored all his performances that I saw in the league, where he's getting so desperate for a ball that he's coming out looking for a handy hand pass, doing nothing and just hand passing it away again.
Just to get his hands on the ball,
just to go, look, geez, I need to get into it some way. Whereas, like, I mean, you would have thought with Tyrone's new game plan of maybe leaving four up, that he would be of the inside one, because you see Peter Hart gets it on the half forward line at one stage. I think he was at one stage he was given a free that wasn't a free, but Monaghan might probably lucky that it wasn't a free. But Peter Hart getting on the half forward line and looking up for a diagonal ball inside, that's where you want Lee Brennan, you know, that's where you need him, because he gets that in front of Ryan Wiley. He's got left, right, and he's got dummy off both sides, and a very good chance that's going to be a score.
Is that him looking for a handy ball then coming out and not?
It's not disciplined. If it's him, it's showing a lack of discipline. That Mickey Hart needs to say to him, stop drifting. I won't hold it against you if you're not on the ball. I understand our game plan. You know what I mean? I understand
that. I think that it was very like. One thing about playing in the inside forward line, sometimes the best thing to do is to not move,
is
to actually be in there standing still, because if by going out, unless there's a runner coming into that space that you can clear it out for, but if not, all you end up doing is everybody drifts out and then the attack is dead, because there's nobody in the inside line, there's no obvious focal point to the attack that somebody can play the pass into. So look, he's inexperienced again at this level. It's his first season, you know, in the team. Like, that's a massive game yesterday. I'm sure he'll take away and learn from it. But it's a combination of both the player and the management team and his teammates understanding that, you know, to get the best out of him, that's what he maybe needs to do. And then you decide whether it's worth having him in the team or not.
Yeah, it was a weird one. But they
do need him in the team.
I think they do need him in the team, but it looks like it's a straight swap between him and Bradley. And I'd start with Bradley.
I'd probably start with Bradley
and bring on Brennan if they're seen as the two of them can't play together, but it's one for the other. Brennan's not a starter for me. Like, he's not. He's just he's a player that can come in when it's opened up a little bit.
And that disappoints me greatly as a supporter of football, these two lads who are such obviously talented, skillful forwards, that there's not room for both of them in the team.
Yeah, no, it's very unfortunate. Because, like, I mean, you don't play both of them if you've got McCallisky and Donnelly. Then you've got four forwards that are not really. Then your half forward line of Sludden, Hart and Donnelly's broken up. Do you know what I mean? That's why there's only three there inside, and you
need a physical presence, and that has to be either McShane or Donnelly or someone like that in there.
Yeah, especially for that. Like, I mean, it definitely. But, like, I mean, I mentioned on the commentary that Burns must have been injured, but I thought Burns was having a disaster.
Oh, yeah.
He went because he wasn't playing well at all. Like, I mean, there was one stage that Brennan was beside him when he shot, made an old swing at his left. Now, I know he's had a good record scoring points this year, but he was going for glory totally in the first half, and Brennan was beside him. Like, I mean, I always thought the Ulster thing was, and I always remember from playing Derry, give it to the shooters, that's all you used to hear. And thought this was a very, like, every team does it now, but it was, I remember thinking at the time, Jesus, we don't shout that in Leash, when, you know, I was like, geez, I wish they started saying this on our team. But, like, it was always give it to the shooter, and here's Burns swinging wildly while Brennan's beside him, and I was just like, Jesus.
Yeah. Well, I remember playing an under-21 challenge match against Down, and the lads from the sideline were roaring that the passes into the full forward line were crap and you need to be giving them a bit better ball. And I was thinking, Jesus Christ, where has this been all my life? In Mead, if the ball gets kicked in your general direction and you don't win it, you're coming off in the full forward line.
Yeah, you should be just glad and you should be just happy enough.
Yeah, like, but it was like three times, I think, did he swing off his left?
Yeah, he was taken off because he was having a nightmare.
I thought he was hauled off, and I remember thinking, geez, fair play to Mickey Hart.
Two things on it, though. In the first half, he offered him an awful lot. He was the main guy who was getting ahead of the ball. ball and running forward.
Yeah, he was.
So he was causing Monaghan problems, but his decision making on occasion wasn't good enough. And I think that Tyrone made a couple of tweaks with that change, and they just they wanted to change it up because he wasn't having the best of games. But early on in the game, he was causing problems with his energy going forward.
Yeah. He did score off his left at the start, in fairness as well.
Well, he kind of got the one where it was Ryan Wiley made a brilliant diving block to flick it over the bar, but in that scenario, he probably should have drawn Wiley and flicked it to the shooter.
I give McGeary a bit of credit. Like, I mean, while the second half wasn't great, he injects a fair bit of pace into it compared to others. Like, there's no... McGeary's one of these lads that does everything at 100 miles an hour, and I like players like that. Like, there's no kind of, let's saunter up here and see what's on. Everything's being done. And that kind of summed up Tyrone in the first 20 minutes and first 15 minutes. Everything was positive and forward, and Tierney McCann was driving. They were all driving forward. And then that stopped. And I don't know why, because it's such a strange one in that all of these games are the flip of what happened at the weekend, like, or happened yesterday, that they start out cagey, they feel each other out, and then they open up. And they're always like that, they open up. This was the opposite. And I think that maybe it was just the prize that was on offer. And, you know, in the second half, was both of them reverted, Tyrone especially reverted to what they're kind of no best, because they're just terrified of losing that game.
Yeah, well,
and that nearly cost them. Nearly cost them for the goal.
It did, yeah. Like, Monaghan started the game very nervously. You know, they looked like a team that were a bundle of nerves. They were just, with everything that was going on with them, they just weren't at it. Tyrone's errors, as you say, allowed, you know, was one of the reasons Monaghan just ground their way back into the game. And Monaghan were the only team going to win that game before the Tyrone goal. Like, they were in control, they were dominant, they were very strong everywhere. And then Peter Hart just came alive. Like, it's amazing, because Peter Hart wasn't in the game, and he got absolutely poleaxed on a kick out where Drew Wiley came, and he was down for a few minutes injured, and you're thinking, God, he looks a bit rattled here. But it woke him up, because from the sideline, where Drew Wiley had punched the kick and went out for a sideline, Hart was down for a minute or two. When that sideline was taken, Hart took the ball. Hart showed for the ball, took it, laid it off. And then, you know, he's making this brilliant run down the centre to set up Tierney McCann to then, you know, set up the goal chance, the goal. And then a couple of minutes later, then he's taking on Drew Wiley and kicking a score. Like, so, I mean, he was unbelievably influential.
Wouldn't you love to see him doing that more?
He needs to play further up the field.
Yeah.
Late against Donegal, he went into the full forward line, and again he caused massive problems. And it looked like the same thing happened against Monaghan, where he just, whether it's that, okay, for the last few minutes we have fresh legs on, so Petey, you move further up the field.
I'm sick saying this, that he has to just play the half forward line. He has to be that just presence always on the half forward line. I've said this for I don't know how long. Like, he can play make, he can give, distribute, he can score. He's all the attributes for that type of player, and they have enough of the other type of player. Like, you don't have to give Peter Hart that role. See him when he took on his man, actually showed a bit of courage. I think sometimes in these tight games, he doesn't do that enough for me. And then he did it, set up the goal. You're like, just Peter, the speed of you.
Yeah.
Like, you're not easy dispossessed. Just go, don't be afraid of getting bottled up. The minute you feel the contact, turn back and throw it out. But go at your man. Take him on.
Yeah.
All these players that are fearless, Jack McCaffrey, that go past their men, like, and have that pace. Use it. It's a commodity that is so important now. Once you go past that fella, another lad's coming to you, and suddenly three lads are on you, and then a pass, bang. It all opens up.
Yeah.
It's all because of having the courage to take on your man. Take him on.
And he's got a better brain than most people as well. Like, when he is on it, I don't think anybody makes a decision as late as he does. It's like he's always just scanning and seeing a different picture every little second. And then he makes a decision last minute. It could change, you know, at any time. But it was, like, I think throughout the game, they were moving him in to full forward. He was in a lot at full forward, even in the first half, and coming back out. So maybe
it is a tactic to keep him up.
Be interesting. I would like to see a bit more from Bandy Donnelly. I know he's marking Vinnie Corey, who goes forward an awful lot.
Vinnie Corey did a great job. He's just he's unbelievable man marker. You know, he's when Monaghan are in possession, Corey's making runs. But as soon as they lose it, he was straight across trying to get a hand on Donnelly. And when he went off, obviously, look at he couldn't expect him to have the legs to continue for the full 70. But after he went off, Donnelly actually then
got into it. Yeah,
gets on the ball a bit more and starts controlling things, and just so solid in possession.
Yeah, he is. Donnelly is nearly the opposite of McGeary. He doesn't seem to be ever going at full pelt. Yeah. He always seems to be just soloing it, like, at half pace. And then when he gets the contact, he'll cut across you and he'll get taken down. He injects a little bit. But maybe it's just his running style. He never seems to be at a flat-out sprint. But maybe it is just his style. Anyways, listen, we've gone over time there. We'll come back with Paddy Power Performance of the Weekend.
is the little dink fist pass from a crowded area into that D we were talking about, where Bernard, I've talked to Bernard about, Bernard's very patient. But this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground, and it bounces into a fella's chest, and there's consternation then in around the D and in around that area. Watch for this in the semis and the final. Do you know the one I'm talking about? That little fisted ball that's just in a crowded area, but it gets to the
yeah,
body.
You have said it three times.
It's in around it. But you're looking at me. You're looking
well,
at me.
Out of a crowded area, isn't it?
You're looking at me with such a confused head in you. It's like I was talking about you trying to get a point in coppers or something there in a crowded area. Yeah, watch for it.
Paddy Power performance the weekend, lads. The first one up is Jack McCaffrey, one of my favourite players in the whole country. Plays the game like he's really enjoying it. Takes on his man. He's fearless. There's nothing to not love about Jack McCaffrey. He always gets you up off the edge of your seat. Do you ever see Jack McCaffrey sauntering at half pace and hand passing it sideways? It's not in his DNA. And I don't know what I love about him. I love when he identifies that there's a fella in front of him that cannot keep up with him and goes, I'm putting on the burners here and you're going, and he does it. Like, I mean, see him doing it so many times that, like, he just knows a fella. Most, sure, in fairness, like, I mean, there's very few that can keep up with him. It's actually interesting, just coming to my mind, Shane Walsh was running up the wing yesterday and Paul Mannion followed him, and I was like, Jesus, keep going, I want to see who wins in a race between these. But Shane Walsh, Mannion, Jack McCaffrey, these lads, Carol O'Connell, these lads have that lightning pace that is just, geez, just imagine having it. And it's just in this modern game, it's just, especially in Jack McCaffrey's position, he's so effective, and he's such a brilliant player, and again, he's a joy to watch because he's enjoying the match.
Yeah, and he actually referenced that in an interview he did after the game, you know, enjoying the game, enjoying ourselves, and like, you rarely hear that, but look, it comes across in the way he plays the game. He's exuberant, and he's aggressive, and he goes after the game. Like,
oh, he is.
He had a powerful 10 or 15 minutes for Dublin where he was, you know, he won a couple of kickouts in contests between himself and Heaney, and he just sort of, just physically kind of had the hunger. He just kind of bullied Heaney out of the way and just drove on forward with the ball. It was just brilliant stuff to see, and look, it was a magnificent performance for him, and he's an unreal player, like, unreal player.
Unreal, and even tactically, Johnny Heaney all year is dropping off his man and covering up in front of his full back line. What are you going to drop off Jack McCaffrey for? You can't. So, like, you're a man down. So Johnny Heaney doesn't know whether he's coming or going, basically, because someone else has to come across to Jack McCaffrey, and they're abandoning a man that can do damage do damage as well. It's just Dublin can hurt you for so many areas that dropping off them. Johnny Heaney wasn't at the races. Brannigan wasn't at the races the other day. These lads that drop off their men into spots, what's the point of them? Because they're not able to get hands on. They've just left a man out the field spare, and the whole shape is kind of, like, Dublin have blown the myth of sweepers wide open. You're actually just losing a man out the field, and you're giving one of them, their men, a free role. Why would you give one of these players a free role?
But that's probably the problem you face every week with Jack McCaffrey. Do you drop off him, he just runs past you anyway, or do you push up on him and he just runs past you anyway?
you push up on him touch tight, he just burns you for pace, and you have to run 80 metres after him, or you just drop off well ahead of the ball, and then he comes at you at speed when you're standing still. He goes by you anyway,
maybe
just try to get out the field a little bit further and foul him outside of Dean Rock's range. Maybe that's the tactic.
You're snookered with Jack McCaffrey. He's just an absolutely brilliant player. Colm Kavanagh, brilliant. And there was a little cameo in the second half where he showed the best and worst of himself. And one was the dive, blatant dive for the free, where he just ran into his man shoulder to shoulder and just threw himself theatrically to the ground and just dived and tricked the referee into a free. Now obviously you'll say all his teammates will go, brilliant Colm, you got us that free in an important game, we only won by a point, that's outstanding. But he dived. We know Tyrone players dive. I don't think you need to be any sort of genius to figure out that Tyrone take that contact and accentuate it and try and get frees. It's going back to Philip Jordan's time where he got Marsden sent off. And look, you can say everybody does it to a certain degree, but I see an awful lot more Tyrone players doing it than other counties. Like, I'm saying that, but here and now, that they, Tiernan McCann last week dived. They dive on a regular basis, and look, they get their frees, and what you call it, cheating or gamesmanship or whatever you want. But then he dispossesses Jack McCarron brilliantly, absolutely brilliantly. And Colm Kavanagh just looks, against every team except for Dublin, like he's just on a bigger physical level. Like he bullies teams.
He manhandles fellas.
Like he's just like, there's no way of getting around this fella. And then you see him against Dublin and he's ineffective completely, which is just a reflection of Dublin. But the one thing I wanted to point out about this Colm Kavanagh dispossession on Jack McCarron, I rewound this because it was like, what on first... look, never bounce the ball as you're taking contact from a defender. Like, that's just brain dead stuff. But Jack McCarron actually bounced the ball on his third step. He bounced it before he needed to. And you know, if you ride a tackle, you're given two coming out of it. You could take six in that scenario. So you can take your three steps, take a good hit off Kavanagh, and then you'll probably get two more coming out the other side of it. He can't dispossess you if you were... But he bounced it coming into Kavanagh. So it was only coming back into his hands when Kavanagh was just like taking candy from a baby. Kavanagh's just too good for that. But technically what McCarron did there... And McCarron has got to the stage where Malachy O'Rourke has lost faith in him, bringing him on 68 minutes in a game they had to win. That just shows maybe where Jack McCarron's game is at the moment. But I know it's not easy to come into a game and hit the pitch of it, but technically what he did there, that was just juvenile stuff.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it was the thing I was thinking at the time, because look, the end result was that Kavanagh got a dispossession at a crucial time, and it was brilliant for him and brilliant for Tyrone. But if you look at what he actually did, he dived into a tackle, lunged in, sold himself, committed himself. That's like, you'd be telling every defender, don't do that. Stand up strong. Don't let him, you know, stand up strong, force him back, slow him up. Don't lunge in. Lunged in and got the result because of the poor play of McCarron.
Well, he probably only lunged in because he saw the ball was bounced.
Yeah, exactly. We'll give him the benefit here and say that he timed it to perfection based on what McCarron did, and that he would have backed off if McCarron had taken the play. But in that, look, it's a basic fundamental. You judge where the tackler is, and you don't play the ball coming into the tackle. If that means you have to take a play on your second step, well, then you do that so that you're then, you know, getting a powerful step as you're coming into the tackle, and you're protecting the ball on the opposite side. Now, to be fair to McCarron, he was just gathering the ball after the bounce, and he didn't have it, and it was a great tackle from Kavanagh. But it's just one of those, I'm sure he'd be looking at it again, and it's a sign of maybe a player not playing with great confidence.
That
he wasn't able to just manufacture that score, because it was set up for him coming in from the wing onto his left foot, step inside Kavanagh, clip it over the bar, draw the match.
Ironically, Nolan is the referee who missed Kevin McLaughlin's 13 steps against Donegal.
Are you serious?
Yeah. he let him away with a few more.
He bounced it on the third step with this fella reffing it. Jesus.
Another thing that I just as an observation in this, and I don't really understand why a lot of players don't do it, is that you have Kavanagh coming across there. I mean, the obvious thing to me in that scenario is that you just hand pass the ball over his head, allow it bounce the other side and gather it. You very rarely see players doing that, but Kavanagh is always he's nearly always the last defender to Tyrone, and he is making himself as wide as possible and hitting you. So when you're meeting Kavanagh, you're already gone by. He's the last line. If you flick the ball over his head, he has a choice then. He has to take you out or allow you to go around him. But taking it into contact with him is always a risk.
Yeah, no, because he's definitely a big man. That you definitely don't see that. It's kind of something you do at underage level.
Well, it's out
fella,
it happens more out the field where there's space. But when you're coming up against Kavanagh, he's the last line more often than not, which means you already have momentum coming into him. So
I
want to see Conor Callaghan do that in the final.
Kieran Kilkenny, lads. Very, very good performance again from Kieran, from what we have to expect. A great leader who always wants the ball. And we talk about these runs and everything. Kilkenny's constantly on the move. Really, really difficult to mark. Unbelievably strong. We did see peak Kieran Kilkenny in the first half, where he got caught in possession because he was pointing too much. Incredible stuff.
Yeah, he's coming across the fence and... Philly McMahon was making the run out anyway.
Yeah.
And Kieran Kilkenny was pointing to where Philly McMahon was already running. And as he was doing that, I think it was Shane Walsh or someone just came across and batted his hand, and his hand pass was ineffective because of it, and Galway won the ball. He could have just hand passed it across without pointing it.
But without pointing it. Like, I mean, Kieran Kilkenny obviously doesn't listen to this podcast, because we've been calling him out in this point for a long time. And it's just in his game now, where that's just what he does. Like, I mean, I'm surprised, we've said it before, I'm surprised Jim Gavin entertains it, that if you're supposed to have this team ethos and it's all a team, why would you have one person directing another player? Like, I mean, that's not teamwork. that's like, well, you could maybe argue
he's
that
helping
his team,
his team,
but like, I mean,
tell them where to go.
My argument,
my argument
would be that at inter-county level, you don't need one of your teammates to tell you where to run. It's an insult. It's actually an absolute insult. I would take it as an absolute insult if a player was regularly telling me where to go on a football field.
That's like, only you're letting your ego get in the way there, Willie.
Paul Mannion, lads, is outstanding as well. 4 points from play, and like, I mean, not having a stellar year, especially after last year's kind of heights. He was brilliant last year. He's nowhere near a shoe-in for an All-Star this year, but that performance will definitely help him along the way. I think he's been misfiring a good bit this year. Like, I mean, he's been hitting a lot of wides, which has been uncharacteristic, but he was back to his best at the weekend.
Yeah, he did well. He causes problems nearly all the time when he plays, just with his pace. I think it was Philly McMahon. It was Philly McMahon going through for a goal chance in the first half, and Mannion tried the shot and kicked it wide. So he wasn't spectacular throughout the game. He still, you know, the high standards we've seen him set, he still isn't at that level really. But again, you can't argue with the scores he put on the board.
No, not at all. Right, Conan, give us the results of the poll here and we'll see what we're going to do with it.
Can we get a late entry?
Oh, Niall Sludden, actually, he deserves a shout out, only because his first half was outstanding and his technique for kicking those points. They weren't really outside of the boot like you're used to. They were like nearly a Rory Beggin free off your hands. He's chipping under them, like, but he's able to get a serious distance in them.
Yeah, and I would like to mention Ian Burke as well, who I thought was
Burke
was very good. Like, of all the Galway players, he was the one that came out of it looking the best. Look, Shane Walsh kicked a couple of great scores as well and scored what was a fairly spectacular goal, got a little bit of luck, but yeah. Unfortunately for them, they were so soundly beaten that those performances and the goal from Walsh and some of the great scores he got, we didn't really talk about them too much.
Yeah, and obviously Shane Walsh was being man marked by John Small, who puts Peter Hart in his pocket, and Walsh was able to get 2 great points off him. Like, I mean, it's not easy play against.
Walsh got 1-2 from play, which is pretty good. Like, yeah, it's pretty good in any match. And Burke, in fairness to him, caused all sorts of problems for the Dublin full back line with his movement. And
Merchant was taken off him.
It's the point you made last week.
Yeah.
It's so much easier to be man marked if you're playing in the half forward line versus the full forward line, because, as you say, it's just the perception of it, lads. It's in people's heads that, yeah, you're going to be marked in the full forward line, but you put the ball in anyway.
Anyway, yeah.
Whereas in the half forward line, a guy could be right on your shoulder. It has to be a hand pass nearly. Lads won't kick you the ball unless you have 5 yards of space. But look, that's just the way it is.
That's the way it is, exactly. But I think Merchant, in fairness, when we call that, I think he's too small for the full back line. He's just too small. He can't play in an orthodox, because he's just too small. End of story. You can't be that size and play in a full back line.
No, I'd
you
agree, because what you're allowing teams would try and isolate him.
You'd imagine
one
that.
And just literally put the ball under your arm, throw him out of your way and move on.
Out the field
he has time to recover because of his pace, and he's got great quick hands. You know, even if he is shrugged off, he'll get back and put the man on the ball under pressure. But close to goal, once a guy has half a yard or a yard, it could be in the net. So you don't have that chance.
Yeah, no, completely agree. And in fairness to Dublin, they're so flexible tactically that depending on the full forward line that you're playing, Merchant might not play or Fitzsimons will. So they have an answer for that. They're not locked into Merchant.
And Fitzsimons, in fairness to him, even when he went on to Burke, he had the pace. He won a ball or two in front of Burke too.
Yeah.
You know, so they have it every way. They have great strength in that, as we all know.
As we all know. It's a great bench, you know, Dublin. you know that, Conan, right, come on, give us the results.
Unfortunately for you, Keane, Ian Burke 8%, number 4. Paul Mannion 9%. Then it was between Colm Cavanagh and Jack McCaffrey. 39% for Cavanagh, 43% for Jack.
43.
McCaffrey.
Do you know what? I'm delighted that Jack won that poll, because I was going to give it to him anyways. He was getting it no matter what.
He thoroughly deserves it.
And brilliant performance by him. And excellent player who we all really like. Trying to find something to sum the whole show up here, and it wasn't really coming to me. Right, that's it. We're going to be back on Wednesday or Thursday this week with a show. We'll have a show the following Thursday, and then the following Thursday will be the All-Ireland preview show. So we're not going away until the Thursday before the All-Ireland. So we'll talk to you then. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and
They regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.